Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to, or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and it is always a pleasure to be with you. And I thank you so much for investing some of the valuable minutes of your life to learn some sparks that really can ignite a positive change in your life. And I'm very excited this week to bring a firecracker of a woman to you. Becky Robinson is dynamic. She's a superwoman, and she rocks social media. And I think right before we went live, Becky had asked what my Twitter handle was, which is Brain Bonanza, at Brain Bonanza. And Becky, you can find at Becky RBNSN, right, Becky?
That is correct. My last name without the vowels.
That
Becky
is a good way
Robinson
to make it.
Without the vowels.
Oh, awesome. And so
it works.
It does. Yay. So I met Becky virtually when I was participating in Kevin Eikenberry's Remarkable Leadership Coaching program and then his Business Accelerator program. And Becky worked with Kevin as well in the area of social media. And I'm so excited to be able to bring Becky to you right now because I am loving her most recent ebook, which we're going to talk about very soon. And because, funny, my husband just yesterday we were talking about Twitter. And he's just a social media thumb, but his comment was, I really don't care when people are going to have a cup of coffee or take a leak. So I think there's still some of that going on out there about what Twitter is and isn't. And so we'll spend a little bit of time talking about that, as well as any questions you have about how to make social media work for you so that you can become a master rather than a slave. And so, Ms. Becky, would you please introduce yourself? How in the world did you get excited about the world of social media?
Well, that is a great question, Melanie, and it also carries a great story. So I have three daughters, and now they're ages 5 and 8 and 11. But about 4 years ago, I was a stay-at-home mom and a homeschooling mom, and I wasn't really sure what my next career step would be. And I wasn't using social media at all. And on New Year's Day in 2009, a friend convinced me to sign up for Facebook. Now, I'd been on Facebook maybe about 3 weeks when this high school friend of mine, who honestly, Melanie, I couldn't remember how he spelled his last name because when I saw him show up on my Facebook, I thought, his name seems like it's spelled wrong. But I had accepted his friend request anyway, and about 3 weeks after I got on Facebook, he started to look on Facebook for freelance writers for the university that he worked at. And writing was always a dream and passion of mine. And so I replied to his Facebook post with all sorts of apologies. I said, you know, hey, I know a lot of freelance writers from high school. Do you remember? And I had this long list of people he could contact. And then at the very end of my message to him, I said, but, you know, I've always had a dream of writing. And, Melanie, I'm so thankful to this day that he listened to that one last little sentence and not all the rest that came before because he asked me for a writing sample. And within a few months, I actually was contracted by that university to start a leadership blog. And I had never written a blog, and I'd never used social media at all. And the marketing director there asked me if I'd be willing to learn how to use Twitter to promote the blog. So I got on Twitter and started to figure it out. I got on Facebook, and I managed all the university's Facebook pages. And I really just learned by going along. And that's where my passion for social media was born.
And interesting sometimes how we fall into those passions. Are there things that you had always wanted? You said you always wanted to write but hadn't acted on that. And it took one person to hear that piece, and then the opportunities began to grow. And not only do you have a passion for writing, but when I hear you talk about social media, I can imagine that your eyes are twinkling, you're smiling.
Yeah, I could talk about social media all day. I drive my family a little bit crazy, I'm sure.
Well, let's start with how, since your current book is 31 Days of Twitter Tips, and as I said, I was sharing that with my husband, and I'll be honest and fess up that one of the things that has been overwhelming for me with social media is deciding on the right tools to use, that's quote, right, unquote, tools,
mm-hmm.
and making right decisions. And I laughed when I read that part during the first 7 lessons and tips in your book. It's just like, just pick one. Like, well,
yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what can be so overwhelming, particularly with Twitter, whether you're deciding to use it personally and having a personal presence first, and then also if you're trying to use it all to as a branding tool or a way to connect with potential clients.
Sure. So let me make sure I'm understanding your question correctly, Melanie. You're saying, so why is Twitter so overwhelming to people with all the choices related to it?
Right. That's the first question. I asked you about 4 in 1. So
I'm not sure where to start. Well, you know, one thing that I've noticed, Melanie, is that one of the reasons why Twitter is so overwhelming to people is that it can really seem kind of like all the tweets are written in a foreign language. So if you're brand new to Twitter and you happen to start to try to look with all the hashtags and symbols and people's handles, it can be quite difficult to decode. And it can be quite difficult at first to see any real value for yourself or for your business. So I think that's one of the reasons why it's overwhelming at first. And I think it can also be overwhelming because people might not be clear about why they're using it. So one of the things I always talk to folks about, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or blogging or some other social media tool, is always to be exceedingly clear about why you're doing it when you begin. Because if you're not clear about why you're doing it, then it's really easy to kind of lose heart or give up, or to give up too soon before you really see its value demonstrated for you. And I think when you consider why you're going to use a certain social media tool, Twitter, for example, you know, sometimes there can be multiple reasons why you might use it. And if you can just be clear about those up front and also have clear goals related to using social media tools like Twitter, and also clear guidelines about how much time you're going to spend, I think those are some ways that you can help yourself to be prepared to be more successful.
Well, I'm going to back up to a couple of those points around, well, particularly timelines. And one of the other websites and books, your 12-Minute Media Playbook, is, you know, how can you really get something accomplished in such a small amount of time, like 12 minutes?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Melanie. And one of the things I try to stress is that it's not only 12 minutes. It's 12 minutes at a time. And so we all kind of have these bits of time in our day that get eaten away. There's a favorite quote of mine, and I probably can't pull it out right now, but, you know, there are many moments like that that some people squander. And if we can take those bits of our day and use them productively and consistently in a focused way, over time it makes a really big difference. At the beginning of the year, I sat down and I calculated, you know, if you spend 12 minutes a day, 7 days a week on a social media tool, by the end of the year, you will have spent over 73 hours. And now if you think about 73 hours at something can make a big difference. And so to me, it's the most critical part is to have a focused and consistent presence. And, you know, sometimes as a business owner, I'm quite busy, and the only time that I'm consistently showing up on Twitter is first thing in the morning, Melanie. So if you were to follow my Twitter stream closely, you would see that I tweet quite often and quite a few times between about 4:30 Eastern time in the morning and maybe 6 o'clock Eastern time. But every day that's when I show up, and people know that I'm there. And now I'm not sitting in front of Twitter for that entire 90 minutes. I have other work that I'm getting done as I'm kind of hanging out on Twitter at the same time. But over time, you can find people to communicate with and relate to, and depending on what your why is, you can spend that focused time in pursuit of that.
Well, and you bring up a good point, too, that you're not on it necessarily all day, that there are particular times when you're posting. Because sometimes people feel that pressure of, you know, got to check in every hour, or I'm posting every hour. So what are some of the common questions that you hear from people that you've worked with or spoken to about Twitter in particular?
That's a good question. You know, some people ask me how many times a day they should tweet. And I think there's a misconception by many people who might be new to Twitter that you can tweet too much. My opinion is probably when people get started, they're not tweeting enough. But to go back to your point or your question about time, I think automation tools are definitely underutilized. Now, I'm not a fan of automation for automation's sake. I don't think Twitter should become a place where the only thing that's going out is kind of pre-planned and pre-scheduled content. I feel like that misses the magic of the ability to relate to people in real time. But I do think that if you use automation carefully and thoughtfully, it can complement the rest of your Twitter presence, and it can make a big difference, especially if you're using Twitter for a business reason. So that's why sometimes when I meet with a client and they're new to Twitter, they might think, oh, well, I can tweet, you know, one time every 2 or 3 days. Well, the pace of information on Twitter is so frequent and so fast that if you tweet once or twice every few days, those tweets are just going to get lost. So that's why it's important and fine to repeat content and to tweet more frequently than you might even think that you should at first.
Well, and funny, because when I have time, and whether that's early in the morning or later at night or in the middle of the night when I wake up, and I sometimes will be for a few hours, as you and I connected in the wee hours the other morning, there'll be this forwarding of about 10 to 15 resources. That's one of the things that I do, is connect people with good information. And so then it's beginning to wonder that balance between my original concepts and forwarding good sources of information. And can you do too much of one or the other? What might be a good balance for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the tips that I included not too long ago on my 12-Minute Media website was this idea of doing a gut check about your recent tweets. So what you can do is you can go to your Twitter profile and you can pull up a list of the recent tweets, maybe 10 or 20, and really take a hard look at that kind of sample, if you will, of what you've been tweeting. And sometimes that can give you a really great picture of how the balance is. For myself, I always want to err on the side of promoting others and engaging in conversation. And I want to have less of the self-promotional tweets. But a lot of it really has to do with what you're trying to accomplish and what people expect from you. So, for example, I don't know if you know who Chris Brogan is, Ms. Melanie, but you know, he's a social media guru guy. And I imagine that he is heavier on his own content because he has a lot of great content of his own to share, whereas someone kind of newer to Twitter might instead be sharing other people's content. So you have to kind of decide, are you going to be a curator of content, which means, you know, are you going to pull together the best of what other people are sharing to be able to share that with the people who follow you, or are you going to be a thought leader and create your own content and information that you're going to share? So if I were going to look at a sample of maybe 20 tweets, what I would hope to see is at least half of them be interaction and engagement with people, that real relationship building that's so wonderful on Twitter. I might want to see out of those remaining 10 about 5 tweets that are pure content of either just thoughts or wisdom or quotes or something like that. And then maybe the other 5 from me would be my own content, And, you know, what I seem to have missed with that is retweeting other people's content, which I think is very important as well. So I don't really know that there's any magic formula to it, Melanie, and I think that you don't want to overthink it. Instead, you want to kind of be who you are and let that shine through. And I think experimentation is fabulous, and I don't think you can do it wrong. Apart from, you know, people who are just spamming others or whatever, in my opinion, that could be wrong, if you will. But otherwise, if you're genuine and you show up with a perspective that you want to make a difference, you can't really go wrong.
Well, and I loved that you said you can't really do it wrong, because sometimes it can be overwhelming to figure out, you know, well, I don't know the rules. I don't know, you know, can I say this? And so being concerned about violating even the unspoken rules. And I want to clarify for people who are either new to Twitter, haven't gotten on Twitter, because believe it or not, I know you know this and I know this, but for those people listening, we know you're out there and you haven't gotten on Twitter yet. You're not tweeting, and it's okay. Said we'd love to have you ask questions either in our chat room or to give us a call at 347-215-8390. And for people who aren't as familiar with the terminology, how do you spam on Twitter, Becky?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think anyone who has been on Twitter will know that there are sometimes people who are obviously just looking to sell their product, and so they'll send out tweet after tweet after tweet with a link to their product. Or perhaps, Melanie, what they might do is they might even address you directly and use your Twitter handle just like they'd use your name, and then add whatever information there is about your product. Now, they don't know you. There's no really specific reason for them to be reaching out or communicating with you. The only purpose is they have something to sell. That's, I guess, the best definition I can think of right now about how you could spam someone on Twitter. An example of that would be if you ever, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, Melanie, but if you tweet something like iPad, then you'll notice within seconds someone's monitoring that iPad term, and then they tweet you and say, you know, find out about free iPads and a link to that. And automatically and immediately you know that that's not really a person who wants to engage with you, but instead it's just, you know, someone who's looking for a quick sale or a quick they want you to click on their link.
Okay.
So I hope that answers the question.
It did, because some of us, like me, are still relatively naive, Midwest gal, you know, and I still read I follow people that I want to read their content, and I think that's been overwhelming when I look at my 210 followers, and how many thousands do you have about right now, Becky?
15-ish thousand.
and you're probably following about that many too, right?
I am. I'm following more than that.
Okay. And so how do you go about organizing that information so that it becomes usable content for you?
Sure. That's a great question. And just first off, one of the reasons why I'm following so many people before I answer the question about how I organize the content is the reason I follow so many is I want to create the opportunity for relationships. So one of the things that you might not know if you haven't used Twitter is that the only way you can send someone a private message on Twitter is if they're following you. And so just as a matter of reciprocity and kindness and opening up the door of possibility to relationships with people, I automatically follow people back when they follow me. And so my numbers stay very close, or I'm typically following a few more people than are following me. So just to kind of get that out of the way. And so the next thing is that I rely heavily on Twitter lists so that I can pay attention to and hone in on the content that's most important to me. So as I make a relationship with someone new, I add them to a list, and I use a third-party application like TweetDeck or Hootsuite or Seismic. There are tons of choices. And then instead of looking at my stream, which honestly is spinning so fast that I can't possibly read it all, I will browse throughout the day when I have a moment or two to see what the people on my list are talking about, and I try to join the conversations that are happening there. So that's kind of my primary strategy when I look at Twitter. There's two things I want to look at. I want to look at anyone who's talking to me or about me, and then I also want to look at anyone who I've specifically chosen to add to my list. So over time, what I hope to do is to add more people to my lists so that I can build relationships with more of the people who are following me. And then the final thing that I might do, the other thing that I, excuse me one second. So the other thing that I might do is I would kind of do what I call like a serendipity search. So I might for a moment dip into that stream that's moving so quickly, that's the stream of everyone I'm following, and I might pause it and kind of scan through it looking for someone to connect with, either some content that I'm interested in or, you know, something that catches my attention, or I might answer a question. And in that way, I can kind of rely on just the possibility that there's someone out there that I'm following who's sharing something that might be relevant to me in that moment. It seems like a little bit mystical, but I found time and time again that when I take the time to do that, I'll see someone new who I really do want to connect with and get to know better. And then the final thing that I also do, Melanie, as a way of trying to connect with more of the people who are following me, is that I quite often will ask a question. And then through the process of asking a question, then I discover people who really want to engage and relate to me. So I have this question that I probably wrote about in the ebook. I can't remember. I'm sure I must have. You know, every morning I say, good morning, who's awake? And it, you know, it's hokey. It's what I do every day. But every day different people answer, and I have a new chance to interact with others. You know, I might in the afternoon, if I have a break, say, how's your afternoon going? Or, you know, what are you most proud of today? Or, you know, whatever's on my mind, I can just ask a question and engage with the folks who happen to answer.
Well, and that leads to a great question about the difference between direct messaging someone and communicating with them with another tweet. What are some of the pros and cons, or when do you know when it's better to direct message somebody, which means it's private and only they see it, or when you reply to a tweet that they sent?
Sure, that's a great question. So for the most part, I try to keep direct messaging or those private messages that are just one-on-one. I just try to keep that to anything that's either sensitive or truly private. You know, if I need to give someone my email address or my phone number, or, you know, ask them a sensitive question, that would be more particularly for someone I know personally, you know, beyond Twitter, that I might use that. For the most part, if I'm having a conversation on Twitter, I want people to see that I'm active and engaged and a real person. And so I carry that conversation on in public. Now, one thing you might not know, Melanie, is that when you hit reply to reply to someone directly, if I use your Twitter handle first, you, like for example, your name, you know, at Brain Bonanza, then only people who are following both you and me will see the tweet. And so if folks aren't following both of us, they're not going to see that conversation. So if you want it to be more open to others, what you need to do is go before the person's Twitter handle and add some words. So you might see that sometimes people will send a retweet or a reply with a period in front of them or some other kind of punctuation. And the only reason why they're doing that is because they want to open that tweet up to a wider audience so that not just the people who are following both handles see the tweet. So what I might do is instead of saying, you know, replying to you, Melanie, by saying at Brain Bonanza, what I might do instead is, you know, say, hey, Melanie at Brain Bonanza. And that way, by putting those words in front, Twitter shows it to a wider audience. It's a little known fact.
Worth the whole interview right there, Becky.
Really?
Well, you know, because I never thought about it that way before, because I usually will, and I laughed when I even put the reminder out early this morning about our interview tonight, and I put Becky Robinson, your name, instead of at Becky Robinson, your Twitter handle, and I thought, I'm driving on to my other job thinking, oh my gosh, she's going to talk about, good thing I did that. as we can talk about, you know, the difference between using someone's name and using their Twitter handle in terms of how Twitter uses that. And I didn't realize until I was reading your book about that when you're communicating with someone in the Twitter stream, that people can only see it if they're following both of you. That was new to me.
Yes. And, cool. Quite often people are surprised by that fact or they're not clear on it. You know, and sometimes, honestly, it doesn't matter to me. You know, I don't need the whole world to see my conversation. I might keep it public, you know, by replying to you with your Twitter handle first. You know, maybe people see it, maybe people don't. But really, I'm just in the kind of excitement of the moment of having that conversation. Some people just want to make sure that every tweet is way out there. And so you'll notice that they use those tricks like the period first. And it's just, I don't typically take the time to do that. It doesn't matter that much to me.
Well, and it goes back to what you said earlier about what is your purpose? What are your goals in using Twitter? And in that balance between, you know, some personal information so people can connect with who you are as a person and what it is you are passionate about or promoting, whether it's your work or the work of other people you follow, that you can build that sense of integrity or not in Twitter, just as you can do in Facebook or LinkedIn, Google+, or other social media.
Sure. And, you know, I think that one thing that people have a misconception about is they think that Twitter's going to be a really fast solution for them or a magic bullet. You know, hey, if I get on Twitter, I'm suddenly going to have so much more traffic to my website, or I'm suddenly going to have more leads or sales or whatever. And I think, honestly, it takes time because relationships take time. And so the best leads and the best sales and the best sources of traffic are going to come because people want to relate to you personally, and that's just not something that happens overnight. Something that happens as you show up day after day and people get a chance to know you.
Speaking of which, I want to talk a little bit about weaving influence, because I love that the imagery that comes with the term weaving influence. Can you
Thank
talk about
you.
Where weaving influence came from? What was your
Sure, I would be glad to. So, Melanie, I talked a little bit about, at the beginning, about the leadership blog that I was writing for a university. And, you know, I really loved that opportunity to kind of splash into the internet world by writing that blog. But I got very tied up. The Twitter handle that I used at the time was the name of the blog. The blog was called Leader Talk. And I was so closely tied into Leader Talk, the blog, and the Twitter handle, and I had to give it all up when I left the work on that blog. And so one evening I was sitting home with my husband, and we'd been talking for weeks, you know, what should my new blog be named? And at the time I wasn't starting a business. I was only just starting a blog. And my husband just came up with it. You know, I wanted something that would tie together the idea of talking about leadership and making a difference, but also talking about social media. And he suggested it, and I loved it. So Weaving Influence became the name of my blog. And then as I started to do business, it just seemed like a natural name that could encompass the business offerings that I had.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about that, too, because we've talked a lot about Twitter because of the ebook, which, by the way, how can people get a hold of 31 Days of Twitter Tips or 31 Twitter Tips?
You're asking the title of the book?
Well, yeah, if I scroll down and even read my own description of the show, because I made sure I put it in there in the show notes, 31 Days of Twitter Tips. That's what it is. Yes, how can people get it?
30. Growing Your Online Influence 12 Minutes at a Time. It's a subtitle.
Oh, which connects to that 12-minute principle in your previous writing. So how can people find, they can click on the link that's in the show notes. If they don't have the show notes handy.
Well, so I have three websites. I have weavinginfluence.com. I have 12minutemedia.com, the number 12minutemedia.com, and I have teambuzzbuilder.com. Those are my three websites.
And I just discovered, Morgan, I want to talk about the last one that I just discovered in the middle of the night.
Sure.
So any of the websites they can go to.
And they will find out more about me. Now, the Team Bus Builder website is still under construction. We have a brand new website that we're going to be ready to roll out here in the next week and a half. You know, very soon it's coming. And the purpose of the Team Bus Builder website is to help us help the authors that we work with. One of the things that my company does best is we specialize in helping authors use social media to launch their books. And so one of the hallmarks or, I don't know, centerpieces of the new Team Buzz Builder website is a slider that features all the books of our authors, and it features my book also. And so we're really excited to roll that out and to bring some more attention to our authors. But the other purpose of Team Buzz Builder is to just build a network of people who are online and using their influence to share great content. And our hope is that we can support and promote people through that network and that those folks will get involved when we have a book to launch to help the authors get their messages out.
Which is a great way to use the collaborative nature of social media and allow people to connect in a positive way. Because sometimes, I think there's so much information out there that people who are looking, who want to promote quality writing or tools or resources, like I do on Spark here, to be able to find people. And so having that opportunity to be in a group that's really committed to supporting one another speaks, I think, too, also to women who tend to be more collaborative than competitive, by gender, generally speaking.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of the things I found, Melanie, a lot of the authors that I've been working with, it's been kind of interesting for me to observe that most of the clients that come to my company are 45 or above. And I think one of the reasons is because for those folks, it's really a steep learning curve as far as, you know, learning how to use social media tools, whereas, you know, the Gen Y folks are more kind of naturally adept at using social media tools. And so some of the pushback I've gotten from clients is, you know, I don't want to ask for help. You know, I don't want to ask people to promote my book. And what I found is that most folks out there are really honored by the opportunity to help and get involved and be a part of something bigger than themselves, and especially to be a part of sharing content that makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely. That's been one of the most exciting things in my work with podcasting has been, you know, and one of my funny stories is someone had tweeted about a book and had the author's Twitter handle, and I direct messaged her about doing an interview to promote her book, thinking, oh, my gosh, she's already got 6 best-selling books, blah, blah, blah. Well, no, she was very excited to do an interview with me, and that was a big eye-opener for me about the power of social media and that we can help and support one another and spread positive, life-changing information.
I totally agree. Yeah, the great thing about Twitter is that it kind of levels the playing field. And in the past, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, there's not a chance that you might have had to communicate with a favorite author. And now I think a lot of thought leaders and authors are available online and ready to interact. And there's just such a huge opportunity to learn from them and get to know people more close up and personal than ever before.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of making a difference, for the people who just found this by search, maybe didn't really read thoroughly, one of the things that I love, and this is a quote from your website, is that Becky wants to help people build their online presence and influence while making social media involvement accessible and doable for time-starved professionals and business owners. And we've talked a little bit about that, how you make it doable for time-starved professionals. We focused a lot on Twitter. But when you're thinking about social media as a whole, mm-hmm. How do you make that doable?
Well, I think one of the ways to make it doable is to kind of take some of the mystery out of it and to help people kind of understand how the tools work and to help people have a strategy of how they want to use social media to achieve the goals that they have for their life and business. And so I think before anything can become doable, it really has to make sense. And so part of what I do is kind of this education piece of helping it make sense for folks, you know, helping people set realistic goals. I was talking with a client this afternoon, and she is a business owner, a busy one, and a new author. Her book is launching in just about 2 weeks, a little bit less. And she's a first-time author and finds the whole process honestly overwhelming. I've been working with her for about 6 months, and she didn't have an online presence at all. So we've gone from zero to where we are now, which is ready to use social media to launch her book. And one of the conversations that we were having was around this idea of blog post frequency, because I think, you know, for folks who are blogging for the first time, it can be overwhelming to think about trying to post consistently and regularly. And one of the things I applauded her for, Melanie, was the fact that she had made a decision early on that she only wanted to post once a week. And she's consistently posted once a week, and she'll be able to continue that through her book launch and beyond. Whereas a lot of times people get so excited about blogging, and they'll get so excited about writing, and they might post 5 or 6 days a week for a month or two and then completely fizzle out and disappear. And they're not really going to get the value from that, of kind of being a flash in the pan on social media. So part of making social media doable is helping people set achievable goals and put systems into place to help them stay consistent.
Oh, that's one of my favorite words, systems. And then with my Saving Superwoman colleague, she, Lynette Patterson, is amazing at creating systems. And anytime that you can find systems, or the brain can get a system, you can develop a habit where you can work somewhat on autopilot, then that frees up your thinking to be innovative and creative. Whereas if you're constantly struggling with trying to get the pieces done, then that limits your ability to expand and to grow. And so that's part of when I first heard you, you were talking about 12-minute media. And the idea of having a system and a structure was huge for someone who was looking at this overwhelming social media presence. Mm-hmm. And while I finding a way to get blogging to fit into the schedule, you know, I can do an hour conversation by myself or with a guest, and talking has always been easier for me than writing. So I've got now to figure out how to take content from the interviews, content from the podcasts I've done, and be able to connect that into blogging. And I also want to go back to what you said earlier, which is coming up with that strategy. So if someone is listening, Becky, and they're either they're thinking about writing a book, maybe they don't have a book yet, is that person a good potential client for you?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I've realized about using books to promote social media is that the farther in advance you start to build your online presence, the better off you are. And there's a few reasons for that, but I think the most critical reason is all about relationships, because typically what you're doing when you use social media to launch a book is you're hoping to mobilize all your online fans and friends and followers to join you in kind of the celebration of the book that you're bringing into the world. Now, if you haven't used social media very much, you're not going to have those relational connections to draw on, so it's going to be much more difficult. And so if you're going to write a book and you're thinking about it even now, the best thing you can do is to start now to build that presence. And even better than that is to look for ways to be generous and come alongside others, not because you're hoping that they'll return the favor when your book is ready, but just out of the joy of being involved and the joy of giving to others. And if you can look for real, authentic ways to give in relationships way far before you might need to ask anything in those relationships, I think you're going to have a much more positive and successful experience. So I have a new book that
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I have a new book that I've just signed on to launch with a client, and the book is launching on October 16th. And I heard today from a colleague of his that he's been working on the book since 2009. Now, not to disparage this gentleman, because he's quite busy and he has a very thriving business, But he has not taken the time to lay the foundation of a solid social media presence. And so it's our job is a lot more difficult at that point.
Well, and I think the point that I was going to make as well is that, and I've heard a number of and read a number of people say that when you are in social media and you're giving for the sake of giving and supporting one another, that does have a way to come back to you versus, like you mentioned earlier, the people who are just out there spamming, trying to sell. That the feeling tone is different and the willingness to support is different. And believe it or not, that really does come through in social media, even though a lot of times you're just having words, at least initially, which leads me into talking a little bit about Pinterest, which is still relatively new in the social media package. For people who still haven't quite figured out how Pinterest might fit into their social media for a business or a promotion of an event, can you enlighten people as to how Pinterest might work?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So Pinterest is all centered on images and photos, and it's kind of like a visual bulletin board, if you will. And so, you know, there's probably a conception that you might have or that others might have of, you know, well, Pinterest is just like a place to waste your time and, you know, find recipes or find fashion or, you know, read some pithy quotes. But I have seen a number of folks use Pinterest for business purposes in a quite successful way. And the idea is to think about the content that you're sharing and find a way to bring it to life graphically. So, for example, Melanie, just as you were speaking about trying to bring your podcast content to life through a blog, another possibility would be to try to find a way to bring it to life on Pinterest. So if you have a talented designer or if you can use yourself some even free tools to take quotes from the podcast that you've done and work them into a nice, beautiful image, maybe on top of a photo or something, and put those on your Pinterest pin boards, then you can link those back to the podcast that they apply to. And so the hope is that when people see that, as their interest is piqued, they'll click on your pin and then click through to the link and be able to learn more about whatever content you're sharing. You mentioned Kevin Eikenberry earlier. I think Kevin does a fantastic job of using Pinterest in that way because he selects really great images to go with his blog posts, and then he has some pin boards that are directly related. For example, Kevin writes a blog post, I think on Fridays, where he quotes a famous person, and he has a pin board that says, "People I Learned From." And so every single one of those photos of the people that Kevin is saying that he learns from go back to a blog post in which he is explaining a quote that comes from that person. So Pinterest is proving in that way to be a great driver of traffic to people's websites and blogs as they choose compelling images and kind of use that to develop interest in the content that they're sharing.
That's another big wow for people who are new to Pinterest. I've not been out there very much because I think I ran into the copyright question early on and then never got back into it again.
You know, that is quite right. Tricky. I agree with you. So the best workaround I can think about is on Pinterest is to use your own original images, and then you don't have that concern. But not all of us have that talent or that ability to create those.
Oh, absolutely.
So one of the most interesting uses of Pinterest, if I can stay on it for a moment, I promoted a book earlier this year, Melanie, with an author named Whitney Johnson. I don't know if you've heard about her book. The title is Dare, Dream, Do, Remarkable Things Happen When You Dare to Dream. And as part of her book launch campaign, she actually employed a graphic artist to bring to life, it must have been 30 or 40 different quotes from her book that were meaningful. Some were ones that Whitney herself wrote, and some were ones that others wrote. And we had a pin board on her Pinterest completely dedicated to those beautiful images that she had created. And we saw a lot of interest where people would pin and repin those images from the book. And it was just a really beautiful campaign, and really inspiring as women kind of talked about their own dreams and related them to the quotes from the book.
Yes, and that, as a matter of fact, on my list of authors to approach about doing a spark is Whitney for Dare Dream Do, because I also have a passion about helping people live their passions.
Very cool. Have you seen those images? I encourage you if you
haven't.
Beautiful.
They are beautiful. And I think because you've had, have you shared them on Facebook too?
I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let's go to Facebook for a few minutes.
Sure.
Again, Facebook is one that I've heard the frustration and experience too, as you start making the, is it a group page, is it a fan page, and how do you keep up when you're, it's very confusing to some of us.
Okay. So would you like me to kind of talk about the different possibilities for using Facebook, like the difference between a group and a page?
That was my next question after I took a breath, see, because we are so on the same wavelength, Becky. Absolutely.
All right.
You that?
All right. Well, so I think that sometimes Facebook is tricky for people because Facebook is such a personal platform. And, you know, I use Facebook a lot just to talk about my kids or to share photos of my family. And so people wonder, how can they turn that into something that they use for business? So the answer that Facebook has created for business is pages. And unfortunately, Facebook does a lot of changing of their algorithms. And so sometimes it's difficult to really get a handle on how to use pages in a way that are going to most benefit your business. But kind of the one of the ways that I've always explained it is, you know, I have, more than 1,000 friends on Facebook. And not all of those 1,000 friends on Facebook are interested in my business or in what I'm doing with my blog. So when I create a business page, and I have a few, the reason I do that is because I want to give those people who are my friends a chance to raise their hand and say, yes, I want to hear about your blog and business. And I'll show you that I want to hear about it by liking your fan page. Now, I think on my most active fan page, out of my 1,000 friends, you know, maybe only about 250 have liked my fan page, or maybe it's probably, I'm looking right now, it's 163. So out of my 1,000 friends, only 163 are saying, yes, Becky, please tell me about your business and blog. And I think that's an important thing to understand, because you don't want to turn people off on your personal profile by talking too much about your blog and business. And so a fan page gives you kind of like a separate place where people have agreed and opted into that content. Now, the other reason you want to use a Facebook fan page is that there might be people who come to your website or read your blog, and you don't really know them personally, and you don't necessarily want them to see, you know, all your communication that's kind of personal or maybe slightly more private. And so you can invite them to connect with your fan page, and in that way kind of keep some of your more personal information to yourself. Now, I just want to say for a moment, though, I think that because social media is so wide open and out there, we can never assume that our content is truly private. And something I said not so long ago in a talk that I gave at a conference was, you know, never, ever say anything on a social media platform that you wouldn't want on a billboard with your face forever. And, you know, that might seem a little bit harsh, but I thought of that, actually I thought of it earlier this evening, and here I'm about to say it on Blog Talk Radio. But my daughter, who just started kindergarten, was an absolute mess. And in my head, I wanted to tweet out, my daughter is a mess. And I thought, you know, would I really want that to be around forever? Not really, you know, so maybe it's not the kind of thing I want to share on Twitter. So I think in any case, if you're using Facebook, you want to be careful with what you share, even if you think it's private or personal. You want to make sure that it's aligned with your branding and that it's something that you want to share. But having a fan page does kind of give you a bit more distance. Now, I didn't talk at all yet about groups. So the beauty of groups, Melanie, is that you can invite people to groups. And if they're in your group, they're much more likely to see your content than if they're on your fan page. Because Facebook uses some sort of complicated algorithm. They try to predict what content people want to see. And so you might post something on a Facebook page that has 300 fans, and maybe only 40 of them will actually ever see that message. Whereas in a group, every single person who's a member of the group gets the notification and stays aware. But I think people are far less likely to want to join a group because of the number of notifications that come. So it's really only the people who are really invested with you that would join a group.
Okay, and that's one of the best explanations I've heard about the difference between group pages and fan pages. Thank you very much, Becky.
You're welcome. That's my pleasure. So can I tell you my favorite thing about Facebook groups?
Yes, please do.
So I think Facebook groups are actually a really great way to connect with people that you know in real life that you want to build community with. So I'll give you an example. I have a team of women, just happens to be women at this point, who work with me in my business. And they're contractors, you know, who subcontract with me, and they're around 5 right now. So we created a secret Facebook group, and it's private to the 6 of us. And we can kind of use it as our own kind of internal social media platform where we can share questions, share pictures, chat back and forth. It's like our own kind of secret chat room that nobody else can find or know about. And it's a really great tool as a leader to be able to create that community. And it would work for a coaching group. It would work for, you know, a community, you know, a mom's group or a PTA group or a Bible study group. Anywhere where you really want to be able to stay closely connected and communicate regularly.
Well, that's awesome. And we've got about 9 minutes left. I'm going to throw that phone number out again. It's 347-215-8390. And then I will also add, Miss Becky, that the bulk of my listeners listen at their convenience rather than when I broadcast live. So most of my listeners download. So what is the best way for people to connect with you if they've listened to this show and they go, oh, my gosh, Becky is rocking awesome. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, so the best way probably is to email me, Becky@weavinginfluence.com. If you're on Twitter, you can always send me a note, either a private message or just a reply by using my Twitter handle, BeckyRBNSN, or one of my other ones, but we'll just keep it simple. That's my primary Twitter account. And so those are the best ways. Or to visit one of my websites, weavinginfluence.com, 12minutemedia.com with the number 12, or teambuzzbuilder.com.
So there are lots of ways that people can find you.
There are, you know. And if all else fails, you can Google my name, Becky Robinson, and you're going to find me that way very easily.
Absolutely. In our last few minutes, because I don't see any phone or chat room questions at the moment, we've not talked about LinkedIn. So what are some of the advantages of, we know that LinkedIn is like the professional Facebook is what it's often called, but there's more to getting the most out of LinkedIn than just posting updates. Can you talk a little bit about how to maximize LinkedIn?
I can, for sure. So one of the things you want to do is you want to regularly take a look at your profile on LinkedIn and make sure that it's up to date. You know, quite often people aren't even doing the simple things of making sure that all their websites are connected on LinkedIn, or, you know, if they're using Twitter, they don't have their Twitter handles connected, or, you know, maybe they don't have their blog connected to showcase the expertise that they're sharing on their blogs through writing. So I would say, to make it a once a quarter habit to go to LinkedIn and to make sure that everything's up to date. And especially if you have a job change or you add a responsibility or you learn a new skill, make sure you're keeping all of those up to date. The other thing would be to really take advantage of the opportunity to give and look for recommendations on LinkedIn. When someone's taking a look at your profile, they want to see what others have to say about your work. And I would say the best way to get more recommendations on LinkedIn is to be generous in sharing recommendations with others. And so if you meet someone new or work with someone new and have a great experience, make it a part of your regular habit of going out and giving them a recommendation on LinkedIn. So another thing that you can also do, and many people are not aware of this, is that if you have a company that offers products and services, you can use a LinkedIn company page to highlight your business's products and services. So if you go to LinkedIn and you search for Weaving Influence, you'll see that you can instantly take a look at the members of my team, who they are. You can take a look at the various products and services that we offer. And you'll even see some recommendations from our clients for those products and services. And so that's an additional way, if you add your company on LinkedIn, to really be able to help people quickly get an idea of what the value is that you can offer, so that they can decide more quickly whether or not your business is a fit for them. So I guess to summarize quickly, Melanie, the first tip I have is to do a regular review of your LinkedIn profile about once a quarter, to be regularly giving recommendations of others and at times asking others to recommend you. And the third part is, if you have your own company or own your own company, to make sure that you have a company page that's complete, that highlights your products and services and also is connected to any other people who might work with you, so people can get a sense of your team and what you offer.
Great. And can you talk real briefly about what might be an advantage to getting involved with LinkedIn groups?
Sure. You know, LinkedIn groups are a great way of connecting with folks and a great way of being able to be known as a resource or someone who can answer questions on a particular topic. I would say that getting involved with LinkedIn groups requires a commitment of really showing up regularly to be a part of those communities. And so I would recommend that, you know, before you get involved with that, you have a plan of, you know, how frequently you can interact and engage. I think local LinkedIn groups are a great way to do kind of a combination between face-to-face networking and online networking. And So I would definitely recommend that to anyone who's looking to grow a local business, to find local groups to get involved with, to be able to attend local face-to-face events and bring some of the online marketing of your business or your products and services and that online networking to bring it offline as well. I would also say LinkedIn is a super go-to place. If you're going to meet someone face-to-face, always try to connect on LinkedIn first. Or once you've met someone new face-to-face, make sure you follow that up with getting connected to them on LinkedIn. You can use LinkedIn kind of like an electronic Rolodex as a way to really keep connected and involved with and aware of the people that you meet face-to-face.
Very nice. In our last
few
minutes,
do you practice that habit, Melanie? Do you do that when you go to an in-person event?
I do. But see, and I don't always think right away about connecting on LinkedIn. At least I hadn't. I've gotten to do it more as I either connect with people on Twitter. I will look for them on LinkedIn, or will, if I'm at a conference and connect with people, talk about following up on LinkedIn. And it's become people originally when LinkedIn started, they were also saying only connect with people you know well. So there's that. There was a certain amount of fear about just massively connecting with hundreds and hundreds of people. Has that shifted at all?
Well, it sure seems to, with the number of requests I get weekly from people I don't know at all. I'm always kind of surprised by that. I will typically want to know someone reasonably well, you know, to know their name, recognize their face, be able to mentally remember how and why I'm connecting with them in the first place. I don't know that there's really any value in connecting to a bunch of nameless, faceless folks who you don't really know at all, and I tend to refuse those type of requests. But, you know, if you have a real reason to be connected to someone, by all means, look for that connection. You know, even if it's not someone you know super well, you know, if it's someone you met one time and you exchange business cards and you see potential in helping that person or, you know, pursuing the relationship further, connecting on LinkedIn is a great way to kind of facilitate that.
Oh, absolutely. And, Ms. Becky, I want to thank you so much for investing this hour with me and with my listeners on Spark to give people some information, some strategies, and some tips that can help them feel more in control, less fearful, less stressed when it comes to the various forms of social media that are out there. And in our last about minute or so, if you could leave one message, because I know, as I said, you're passionate about social media and there's that excitement for you. What do you want to share with people who maybe are, again, in that 45 and older group who maybe haven't gotten as involved? What would you want to tell them?
You know, I think I would want to tell them that social media tools are really just that. They're tools, and you need to remember what the tools are for. And my opinion is that the tools are for relationships. So if you can keep that idea of relationships and relationship building at the heart of everything that you're doing, then you're going to be successful.
And I am so looking forward to continuing to build a relationship with you, Becky, and to support the work that you are doing, as well as the work of the amazing authors and clients that you are connecting with. Thank you so much for including me in that. And again, I look forward to also having you back as you have more books and more tools to share so that people really can have that spark to a positive solution to what can be very overwhelming in the world of social media. Thank you so much for being here, Becky.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Melanie.
And a reminder, you can Google Becky. You can go to Weaving Influence. You can find her on Twitter at BeckyRBNSN. And check out that 31 Days of Twitter Tips. Very short, a little bit every day. Sort of like baby steps. It's a great resource. It's an ebook. Thank you so much, Becky, for writing that and for making it available. And I look forward to connecting with you soon. And for
Thanks
my
so
listeners,
much.
Oh, you're most welcome. And for my listeners, I'm going to share real quickly a little bit. Next week, I have more authors. So exciting when I can bring them to you. The topic for next week is Sparks for Awakening the Voices of Women. And I will have Marianne Hess, who's one of her stories is in the second edition of the book Empowered Voices, True Stories by Awakened Women. And Andrea Hyland is the founder of Heal My Voice and the driving force behind Empowered Voices. So if you've ever felt like your voice doesn't matter or that you can't really express your feelings or thoughts, or maybe that there's something awakening in you, but you're still not getting it out there, I invite you to join me next week with Andrea and Marianne. And until next time, remember that social media gives you an opportunity to be social. It is media. It's about just pick your tools and building relationships. Until then, keep making a positive difference by bringing your best self in the world. And I will see you next time. Until then, take care and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Ms. Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.